This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Chris with a couple announcements. I'm going to be in Portland, Oregon in a couple days, July 1st through 3rd at Helium Comedy Club. Get your tickets at portland.heliumcomedy.com. Also, I have a new comedy album coming out, an audio album. It's called the Rescue Cactus Album. Some of the material from my Rescue Cactus comedy special, but recorded on a different night. We recorded two shows along with on that album a lot of material you haven't heard, which I'm excited about you hearing. So get my album. It comes out on the 27th of July for Pandora and SiriusXM, and then the worldwide, I guess I can say, release is on August 3rd. So get my album. Thank you. And of course, get Jordan Morris's new graphic novel Bubble. It's coming out July 13th. Get that wherever you get your books and you get your comics. Okay? Thank you very much. And you're welcome.
One, two, three.
Boom.
That was a good one.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim. Give us a time and date. Terminal and gate. We wanna send you off in style. We wanna welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris. Welcome to Do You Need a Ride? This is Chris Fairbanks.
And this is Karen Kilgariff.
Karen, I assume that all day you've been glued to the TV watching the U.S. Open of Golf.
Oh, God, I love it.
Yeah, you can't stop.
With Ennio Rigatano getting in there and just hitting it the furthest.
See, I don't even know who that is. Are you deeper?
I made it up.
Oh, Eddie Rigatano. Damn it. See, now that proves that I haven't been watching it either. But
I just wanted to call you out.
I am self-conscious about, I think I've told you about how much I've been golfing, just because golf in general, other than the movie Caddyshack, is not cool and it's a waste of resources and it's exclusive, which is nothing I've ever wanted to be part of.
No, this is a whole new side. This is the country club Chris Fairbanks said I never knew was even in there. And I think now might be what your dominant personality has been all along.
It's all I think about and I'm addicted to it. And I did not see it coming a year ago. And anyway, I spent a great deal of money on new clubs and I went to the place that you, Dunder Mifflin, whatever, Griff. Brooks and Dunn, I forget the name of the store, but Dunn is in it. And they were so mean that it reminded me that golf is not cool. Just these mean little men. I went up to one of them. He said, can I help you? And I said, yes, you can. What do you know about these new Cobra clubs that are all one length? And he said, well, they're all one length and they're made by Cobra. And the anger underneath, like he was being a smartass, and I immediately said, ooh, is it comedy time? And then he shrugged and walked away. And then I went up to him and said, can I get the Wi-Fi password so I can buy these clubs on Amazon? And he almost punched me. It was like a whole thing. I had like, I immediately had a fight with this little angry little man. And eventually he went to an office and breathed through it and then came and helped me. And we ended up, we left practically hugging.
No.
Yeah. I mean, I killed him with kindness. We had our initial fight, but I do feel good about how I left it.
Because I'm telling you that if I were an angry little man and you said, can I have the Wi-Fi password so I can buy these on Amazon? It would have been over. Like the fact that you drove it to the edge, Thelma and Louise style, and then brought it back is really, it's impressive.
He came out of the gates swinging. And I had to do it. I think he's a better person for it. And so am I. And we had,
what a way to kick off this episode, just to kind of to affirm and confirm humanity's goodness. And Chris Fairbanks out fixing people.
And it's important to stand up for yourself and have little confrontations, knowing that your next plan is to smooth things over. It's very
just
important.
Constant confrontations.
Don't let it.
So you know you're alive.
Yeah. I feel alive, Karen. That's the reason I brought it up.
Good. You should. And I think that's the best time to introduce our guest is when we're feeling at our peak living experience.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it? Do you want to go for it?
I think we could do both. You can chime in when you want, but I feel like I would like to introduce this guest because he's I've lived in Los Angeles long enough to say he's an old friend of mine. We've worked together. He's hilarious. He can do so many things. He kind of introduced me to podcasting, really, by having me on Jordan Jesse Go. And then,
me too.
If you haven't heard his episodic scripted podcast Bubble, it was really groundbreaking. I hadn't heard a lot of podcasts like that in the past. Also, if you back him into a corner, he can just do stand up. And he's never even felt it's like a pastime. And I've seen him kill at stand up, which almost annoyed me at the time. But then I remembered we're friends. Put your hands together for Jordan Morris. That's right. At home, put your hands together.
Oh, hey, guys. Sorry, I spaced out a little bit. I've just been glued to this U.S. Open of Golf. Have you guys been watching this thing?
Yeah, right?
See, Karen?
Mm-hmm. Can you believe when Shelvin Schlesley three-wooded his sand trap? I was
all the way down that thing. I mean... He took the ball and he moved it down the green, which is what we're here for.
It's the fundamentals. Yeah. You can count on Shelvin Schlesley for those sorts of fundamentals. Sorry, Karen. I liked it when you made up the name of the fake golf guy. Also wanted to do it.
No, you have to get in on that. My dad watches golf all day.
Yeah.
That's his number one watching sport because it's like the perfect, it's like just relaxing. It's almost like forced meditation. I think it's so slow and low key. And he gets so mad when there's like fans in the audience or there's loud people because he's like, what the hell are they doing? Like, it's like not classic golf.
Right.
And
what is this,
honestly,
tennis? What is this, some punks watching tennis?
What is this, a Cyndi Lauper concert? That's probably what he would say. But
what are these yahoos here to see James Taylor?
Partying. But I would watch it with him and he would ask me, he would be like, who's up now? Because he was further away from the TV than me. And I literally would squint because I wasn't wearing my glasses. I would squint and just guess the names. He's like, who the hell are you talking about? And so I started doing that just almost like to mess with him. Because my dad tries to force my sister and I to love sports as much as him. And I took it like I've taken it as a crusade of like, I will not bend to this demand. Like, you come and like a thing I like, because we have to do everything you like and do. So like he'll walk in and I'll walk in and he'll be like, can you believe that thing that happened with Marshawn Lynch? And I'll be like, Dad, it blows my mind. And he's like, oh, you're being sarcastic. But the assumption is that I'm in that conversation automatically every time.
That's so great. I love it. That's how my dad is.
Karen, what's the secret to a good fake golf name?
Yeah,
I think Eddie trying to make it sound slightly foreign, I found, because there were lots of people from different countries, but also it's people seem to have kind of snappy names, like E-Z-Z-I endings or an E-T-T-I. Then sometimes I just do stuff I like. Like, the first name I thought of was Ennio Morricone, and then it's just, let's do a version of that, and it sounds like a real person.
This is such a fascinating glimpse at your process.
Shut up.
I think
this
I thought
is real
of a good
behind
one.
The scenes.
This is like, great. We're getting into
how
it.
I do it.
Here's Marin wishes.
Here's
he
my
had
fake
it.
Alt name. Kurt Schlesinger. I think that's a good one.
That is he good. Real?
No, no. See?
Oh, that's
yeah.
great.
Sound
that was
so
really good.
Real.
You guys have a new segment, real or fake golf name.
Have we ever had a segment on this show? I'm writing that down.
Yeah,
that's
we
what should... you need, one segment.
We just one.
Start doing mini segments and just putting them out there. See how people respond.
Corin Bunsen.
Most of them true or false type. So, you know, people could be at home yelling at their, as they listen, their answer. It's
Jordan,
interactive.
Have you in quarantine, like Chris with his golf, have you picked up any new hobbies or interests?
Yeah, I have. I was a kind of a casual swimmer before, but I started swimming a little more seriously. And I think it's probably kind of sort of related to Chris's golfing in that, like, there's just only a certain amount of things that were open during COVID. And I'm saying past tense, I don't think this Delta variant's going anywhere. I think we should all start licking handrails. I know that, like, a lot of people started golfing just because it was, you know, an outdoor thing you could do. And so, like, outdoor pools had, like, more restrictions than they usually do. Like, you know, couldn't go in the locker room, so you just had to, like, drive home with a wet towel around you. But, like, but, you know, outdoor pools stayed open. So I started swimming a little bit more seriously, and I started running. I thought I would fucking
what?
Hate running. My doctor suggested it. But I got really into it because I liked the playlist making aspect of it. The running apps, like, sync up with Apple Music pretty easily. So you can, like, and so, yeah, like, curating the running playlist really made me, like it. And, yeah, now I do it a couple times a week still. I've kind of kept up with it. So, yeah, those were my, like, quarantine acquisitions.
Be
and
careful.
Cat singing, too. Singing to the cat more.
Oh,
often.
Yeah, yeah, you got yeah. it. I do that with my plants. Yeah. But if you get into the playlist curation, running could slowly slide into being a professional DJ.
Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah,
yeah.
You got with the wild world of song curation.
Because, yeah,
it's a real
one
worry.
Minute you're running and the next minute you're just wearing a vest with no shirt in Vegas.
Just throwing cakes on the front row. What? How did I get here?
Do you
and
have,
then the I movie thought
you...
pauses and rewinds, and that's the start of the movie.
Oh, right. Yeah, you got to show the flashback.
I thought you were going to say, be careful, because you could slide into manorexia, which I was like, also a serious concern. I'm very interested in the fact that, Jordan, you went, it feels to me like you went, like, I feel like there was kind of two directions in quarantine, which was watch everything on Netflix and eat everything made of sugar, or really fight it and, like, get outside and, like, do things.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you brought up sugar, because something that I found real early on during quarantine stuff is that drinking bummed me out. Chris, you know this about me. I like to have a drink. It's a lot
of
fun.
It's something you and I used to do together sometimes.
Sure. And
I was there for it.
Yeah, then I, you know, my first instinct when, like, everything happened was like, all right, time to learn how to make the old fashioned in the house. Time to barrel age the whiskey and fucking muddle mint and shit.
Yeah.
And then I would do that, and, like, it was two sips to sadness. Like, I was just bummed after two sips, and, like, the world is fucked, and this is fucked, and I hate this, and I'm by myself, and where did the cat go? And, like, you know, just
very dark.
Yeah, just it really got dark fast. And I, like, you know, so I kind of just stopped drinking. And, you know, when people would do the, like, all right, Zoom happy hour, Jackbox night, like, I would just, like, have a seltzer. And, so I stopped drinking. But it turns out that your body still wants that sugar. So my fucking sweet tooth is out of control. All I think about are donuts. I joined Instagram too. I joined Instagram during quarantine, and all my ads are just like Cold Stone and Baskin Robbins. Like Instagram knows how like corny I am for cake batter ice cream.
Like you must be whispering it to yourself or something. And like, Alexa's over here. Yeah. Like, oh, if only just one donut.
Oh. Funfetti.
Yeah, you gotta stop sleeping with your phone next to your pillow.
Yeah, I know. It can like tell that my eyes are slowing down when the Haagen-Dazs ad pops up. It's like, oh, this guy wants to fuck this ice cream. I know it.
That's a huge thing, though, because the same thing happened to me when I quit drinking. It was like the way, because I drank for very badly and for a very long time, but it was the waves of like, ooh, I'm so cleansed and clean.
Right.
And then it was like, and I was walking everywhere. And so, yeah, it was like, it's the new me. And then suddenly it was just like, oh, this gaping maw. It's not just craving sugar. It's like craving, you know, human experience, or like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's like the loss of something, or it's so much deeper and heavier and more insane that it's like, it's when I started realizing, oh, this addiction thing is just, it doesn't matter what the topic is.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
If you know, if you're not drinking, then you want sugar. If you're not eating, then you want to shop. And it's all the same kind of like black hole filling, I think. For me anyway.
Yeah. No, that like, that totally, that tracks with what I was experiencing too. I think you just like, yeah, certain brains are tuned to like need just like a kick or some intensity or something like that. And yeah, right. If the fucking muddled old fashioned isn't doing it, like, yeah, just, right. Yeah. Just shove a donut in there.
Yeah. Get that Postmates delivered that I discovered in quarantine. Postmates delivers salt and straw ice cream. So it's insanely expensive. It's $12 a pint, I think. Like, but it's the highest grade, best, you know, like best reviewed or whatever. And I was like, ooh, this is on Postmates. And it got to my house literally in like 6 minutes. And I was like, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
This That's is the dangerous. End. This is where my hermiting really starts because
Ooh, do they deliver it with more urgency because it can melt then?
It's I mean, I immediate, get
because I don't can't know. Bring it doesn't soupy ice cream.
They're not going to deliver it last, I guess. That's for sure. But I don't know. Wow. It's just the whole thing is so like, I think for a lot of those quarantine experiences, the one thing I would say to myself is just go easy on yourself because you're going to do a bunch of fucked up shit, but don't like, this is unprecedented. Don't judge it and don't make it extra hard by being mean to yourself. But yeah, this other part of me fucking loved it. It was like a snow weekend. You know what I mean? We got snowed in. There's nothing we can do, but you know, globally.
I saw everyone else kind of treating initially, I saw other people that don't normally drink all the time, like you said, and during Zoom shows or just seeing people chat online about it, they're all drinking and having bottles of wine, and I was in panic mode. I'm like, I have to turn my life around. I have no control over what's happening in the world. Now is where I become a guy that does chin ups and sit ups and eats right, and it kind of wore off, though, I have to say. Now that everyone's back to normal, I'm slowing it down again with my own choices. So I'm back. I'm having a seltzer right now, you guys.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, it was for golf earlier today, and I didn't have it because, you know.
It's interesting. I was thinking about this when you told me that you were golfing, Chris. It does seem like there's a correlation between, like, punk guy who's getting a little bit older and golf. And I consider you a classic fuck the system punk rocker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even if I don't, you know, like all the music, I'd never got into the, you know, Blink 182 and everything. You know, I'm punk rock. Down to the core.
That's your spirit. But yeah,
From the golf club story that you're fucking punk rock.
That's exactly right. I stuck it to the man, didn't I? In a very punk rock way down at Dunder Mifflin.
Yeah, but it seems like you see a lot of pictures of, like, you know, Alice Cooper and Fat Mike in, like, their loud golf pants.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
With, you know, a bunch of, like, like red bloated banker guys, and, like, they're all golfing together. I don't know what the correlation is, but it seems like there is one.
And I can't put my finger on it either, except that the skateboarder friends I have that I've been meeting with also have gotten into golf. Yes, Karen, I see.
I know the correlation.
Okay.
It's rich guys and guys that are pretending that they're doing business while they golf. And I think that started it, where it's like, it's a hang and it's a guy thing, but also if we can do, like, fake business stuff or real business hanging or whatever. And then I think that just spilled out over onto, here's a different way guys can socialize, where you don't have to go stand in a sports bar, whatever.
Early on, I just desperately wanted to be near other people, and the guys that I golf with are really good friends of mine now, but at first I didn't know them very well, but it felt so good to just have that interaction. But now I'm to the point where I can't believe some guy that makes medical devices goes out and golfs with his doctors. I can't talk while I'm golfing. I have to focus. If you talk, I'm gonna look at you weird. I'm silent the whole time. And that's how serious I am, you guys. I'm just bragging.
I've never been able to. No, I play a lot of video games, and I've never been able to make a social time out of video games because I just want to sit quietly and do a good job at it. And I don't want to, like, chat. So, like, I was never good at those, like, dorm parties where everybody played Mario Kart because I wanted to take the Mario Kart seriously.
I feel bad.
It's very serious.
It is. We have to get the best time on Rainbow Road. We have to
win.
Moo Moo Meadows.
Here's the thing about video games. Yeah. It's people are pretending to be casual. Everybody wants to win.
Yep.
Yeah.
Only.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you can get high or you can chit chat or whatever. But ultimately, when you win, that is a true and real victory. And that's what everyone's trying for. But then you have to kind of, like, you don't think you're going to do it because you're not the best, whatever. You'll underplay the importance in all of our hearts.
You're right.
In all of our inner child hearts. It really matters.
It's a regret of mine, and it has been for years, that I didn't let her, but maybe I was afraid my mom would get good and beat me if I let her play Super Mario Brothers. I wouldn't let her. I think about it all the time, seriously. My mom wanted to play video games with me, and I actually wouldn't let her. What a little shit.
I mean, this is very similar to the golf store situation. I think this is a control thing. I think it's a power dynamic.
Or, as Jordan said, am I just simply a little punk rock?
It might be. It could just be the anti-establishment juices running through your veins.
There, those juices are always flowing, babe.
Lifelong juices.
that reaction that the golf guy had to you asking about the clubs, and he's like, oh, they're made by Cobra and they're the same, like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I associate that behavior with guy who worked at the comic book store, and I was so amazed to hear that kind of behavior you would see at a golf store, although I guess it makes sense because they are both domains of the, like, smug white guy, so I guess it tracks more than I initially thought.
I thought he would want to talk about them because it's a kind of a divisive issue that all of a sudden someone made clubs that are all the same length. You know, usually they're all different varying lengths. And then one pro was like, why, it would be easier if they were all just the same length. And it made sense to me. And I read about them and I wanted this guy to talk me out of them. But instead, I was met with that abrasive comic book attitude.
Right.
Or like the Guitar Center, where when you're coming in, there's no way you can be good enough to have the conversation with the person who's chosen to work at a store based in your interest.
Yeah.
So, and I would always go into any guitar store with so much insecurity because I'm not there to prove to you that I'm, Nancy Wilson from Heart. I just want a fucking capo or whatever. And I want to do my own thing privately. But, like, yeah, it is a little bit of, I think golf especially, because I bet you those clubs mean something to those people that work there. Like, oh, this is the, you know, dot-comification of the great art of what, you know, there's some, you know, there's some argument within it that like they're classicists. And so this is some horrible version.
I think this guy's response was, I hate that this new thing that it's the clubs you're asking about. And I'm going to be very curt with you. And that's what it was. That's so funny because everyone was in, everyone that came in there was trying to prove, just like you said, that they were like dropping the names of the local golf pros and trying to slip in how their score and how they've been doing. It was so weird. Like, chill.
Local LA golf pro?
Yeah.
Who is that?
Oh, you know, I almost dropped my friend Brandon's name in Palm Springs. He's the touring PGA pro there. Just so they would come and talk to me and sell me these damn clubs. It was the opposite of going to a car dealership. They wouldn't listen to me. I felt alone and I was scared.
I bet you they thought, because of that hat you have on, they thought you were poor.
They
wanted you out.
My hair was all over the place and they thought I was riffraff. And I saw it right away. I didn't like it.
Karen, I'd like to hear more about Guitar Center employees as like characters. Like, I love the character, the king of the small kingdom. Like,
yes.
What? Yeah. Because I, as a non-musician, I'm kind of vaguely aware that the Guitar Center employee is like a figure that kind of looms large. Can you describe them?
Now, I will say this. Many, many people have worked at Guitar Center. I've not dealt with all of them. Sure. I'm not saying this is comprehensive or across the board. But as an insecure woman going in to buy a guitar or a pickup, that was the problem. So we had Mary Lynn Rice Cub and I had this act, the Girls Guitar Club, where we would literally play in clubs and we were playing acoustic guitars that sometimes had built-in pickups and sometimes we had to buy a pickup. And the whole act was how we didn't know how to play the guitar. And some people loved it. Many hated it. Especially like professional musician and soundboard type guys.
Hated it.
So going into that store, my whole thing was, I'm not going to be able to sit here and talk to you about like bar chords or anything. I literally know four chords. I just need to get this shit to go do this show. It's mostly comedy. I'm not here to qualify. So I was definitely coming in with a lot of heat and defensiveness and fear. And I always got the guy that looked like he was the bass player in a Sepultura cover band or whatever. So he's fucking serious. He has been like practicing in his studio apartment off of Hollywood Boulevard for 19 years. And people like me think they can walk in and blah, blah. So I feel like it would always be this kind of, I would always get the worst possible person for my behavior when I feel insecure, which is irritated, sarcastic and immediately angry with any slight anything. And then I would get the guy that was literally like, what do you want it for? And then I would just be like, I want to fucking nag it to death.
You just explained to me the attitude with which I went into that store. I was quick. I was ready. I was defensive. I was self-conscious. I did the exact thing you're talking about. And I happened to run into Golf Sepultura guy.
I think would be worse.
Yeah.
That guy parties less.
I think maybe something that unites golf guy, comic book store guy, and Guitar Center guy, probably a lot of long male ponytails.
Yeah.
I think a lot of chunky either necklaces or bracelets, you know, not chunky, but like they stand out like a signature piece necklace or a signature piece bracelet of some kind where they're like, this is what I'm like.
Yeah. This is my peacocking flair.
Yes. That's right. It's a skull. Can you believe it?
I'm like the mind freak, but for golf.
There was a guy in Green Apple one time, or was it Meltdown? I went in to check because my friend wrote an issue of some popular comic book. And I swear to God, I don't know I know the very basic things. And then I know, like, when I used to love Dan Klaus and just go buy whatever he had, but I don't know correct terminology. And I didn't know how to ask for the thing. And the, like, just trying to put the question together, the guy hated me so much that I just left. I was like mid sentence of trying to figure out how to ask, like, it's the newest issue of this one comic book. And as I was trying to put it together, I was like, just don't, whatever this comes out as, it's not going to work. Just don't do it. Like, he doesn't want you to. He doesn't want to help. This is his world. He's trying to actually protect his world from people like you, which I get. Like, it's that kind of like, don't just come in here, you fucking weekenders, and get one issue.
Yeah.
Like, dedicate your life to these characters. And, you know, I get it.
That's so funny. That also describes, God, I just wanted to prove to this guy I wasn't just a weekender. Damn it.
How but you had weekender hair.
Yeah.
God. Weekender smile.
I should have went in there a little more dressed, a little more. Yeah. I realized where I went wrong. Thank you for explaining it with your stories,
hey,
Karen.
That's what we're here for. Jordan, with your swimming, is there anything that's like that's official? Are you swimming? Is it your own plan or is there a league?
I'm part of something. It's called a swim club. Yeah, it's called a master's program. It sounds a little more impressive than it actually is.
Yeah.
You're getting your master's in swimming?
Yeah, I am. I'm getting my master's.
Congratulations.
It's Dr. Swimmer now. our mutual buddy Andy Wood turned me on to this.
Oh yeah.
It's kind of a swim program. There are a variety of different lanes for a variety of different speeds. Mm. So it's like you can, if you are like a jacked lean human bullet, you can go in one lane, and if you are me, you can go in a different lane far away from the jacked human bullets, but you're all still kind of doing the same basic thing.
Do you have to showcase your ability and be assigned that lane? That's where I would be.
You know,
very
you kind of just have to be honest with, you know, with yourself and with everyone, how fast you are. And it's kind of like, mm-hmm. if you're swimming in a lane where everyone is too fast, everyone will be fucking golf store mad at you.
Yeah.
4 seconds.
Of course.
Because you kind of all have to swim at the same rate. Or else the whole thing doesn't work. So
there's multiple swimmers per lane based on level.
Yeah. They kind of changed it a little bit in COVID. It was like one person to a lane for a while, but as stuff kind of started to open up. But yeah, typically in a non-COVID situation, there's, you know, 3 or 4 people in a lane. So you all kind of have to agree on how fast you're swimming. And if you can't swim as fast as those people, you should go in another lane.
You should fuck off.
Yeah, you should also go fuck yourself.
You should go fuck yourself.
Maybe go wade in the therapy pool with the elderly Russian women who have new hips.
People with brain damage.
Yeah.
And you also said, I think you told me this, there are other people that swim decently with a snorkel that goes up the center.
Yeah,
head, right?
There's a lot of weird gear. So there's a snorkel that goes
that
up the
gear.
Front of the face.
I got it.
You got the front face.
Yeah.
And there's also something I've seen used, a mono fin, where it's you put both your feet into a mermaid tail.
Oh,
and you
love that.
Around. I think Laurel Martin has one of these.
Ooh, does she?
Yeah, she swims at my pool sometimes. And I think I've seen her with a mono fin, where you just kind of kick around like an elegant mer person, and it's really beautiful. I feel like I would like to try it. I think I would feel very elegant.
Yeah. I do like the frog kicking aspect just for my own hip therapy, though. So I'm out. Merman.
Okay,
for
you don't
me.
Have
Sorry.
To get one. You
Sorry.
Won't get it. I we won't like... buy you one.
Thank you.
But
Karen,
I'm
let's
feeling
buy one. Karen,
we're gonna buy one for Christmas. No, he will not accept.
I can hear you guys, and I'm excited.
Shit. We're going to get you a mono fin, but for each leg, so you can frog kick with huge fins, which is a whole new, it's like a brand new amphibian that you are going to become.
It's called a turbo frog. They are.
Are you ready?
They're nature's greatest mistake. Affront to God.
I feel like if you did that and you had two monofins on either foot, you would actually come up out of the water. Like your chest would be up out of the water. You'd be so powered.
I would. Forward. I remember when I first tried to take just swimming in college. I wasn't getting my master's. It's the undergrad swim. He would watch me swim and he would get frustrated not understanding why my body was sinking, like why my legs sink. It's just like, well, you just have heavy legs. I don't know why this is happening, because he was, you know, this is just the kicking stage where you have the board and you're kicking. And right. This guy had no faith. He basically talked me out of swimming until a doctor, like you said, assigned swimming to be one of my activities, and I made myself start doing it. But I'd be nervous to show up for your club, George, if with my snorkel. So you're saying there are guys with snorkels like me, and maybe I could join you.
You would look like you were serious if you had the snorkel. I think the snorkel would help your case. It would be like, this guy's got the gear. Cool.
It does have Michael Phelps' signature on it. Yeah.
There you go. See, you got like, wow, this guy knows Phelps. Cool.
Yeah.
And all the snorkels are the same length, which is very controversial.
Right. Yes. The Cobra snorkel.
Cobra snorkel.
Can I?
They come up like that.
Can I admit something to you guys? The snorkel comes with these caps, like a neon green one and a blue one, all with a smaller hole. So it's supposed to, I guess, help with your lung capacity, make you a better swimmer with less oxygen coming. Does that make any sense? So I left one on there, but I cut the hole bigger just so, because I was so self-conscious about having a snorkel. I left the green cap on top. So people in the know would be like, that guy's good. And they wouldn't notice that I also had flippers on, which make me fast. And now I know that I kind of wish I hadn't admitted that.
You would absolutely get caught by Jordan's swimming group.
Yeah.
You wouldn't last. That scam would not fly. I mean, I'm speaking for your group.
We would take you behind the Verdugo Aquatic Facility and beat you with towels.
hard snaps.
Just really whip you with some wet towels.
One confused guy shows up with the Full Metal Jacket sock filled with pennies. Hey, wait a minute.
Come on.
No, this isn't a thematically appropriate thing to beat this guy with. We're swimmers.
You're killing me.
But I've changed in my car.
I would be nervous to swim with the... Andy Wood, just because I went to some spa birthday thing and all these pro swimmers came in, Olympic swimmers, and he knew them. He knew their names. He knew their stats. They started talking about swimming and I just wandered off to a hot tub. But I assume he's a very good swimmer.
He's a great swimmer. Yeah, he's really fast. He's in great shape. A nice man. He's got it all.
He really does. He won on Jeopardy.
We won on Jeopardy. Jeez.
He won on Jeopardy.
I won on Jeopardy.
Baby.
My dad would call him a physical specimen. That's how he compliments men with a nice figure.
Now, Jordan, can you do the spin where when you're swimming forward, you do the dude to turn around and go the other way?
Yeah, that took me a while.
It's hard, right?
Yeah, I was doing when I first started, I was doing what they call an open turn, which is when you just touch the wall and then kick off again. But eventually I learned to do the flip turn. And it's really taken my game to the next level.
Not to get too specific and talk too much swim shop, but do you know anyone that does the rollover turn with a snorkel where they come out and blow it out like a whale? When they breach the surface.
There's got to be a way to do that with the snorkel.
Not even Andy Wood can do it.
No. Wow.
Not even.
Well, I have a new goal, don't I?
You prove him wrong. Prove him wrong. This dude's so fucking punk rock. He's doing flip turns with the snorkel. He doesn't care. He doesn't care if he gets a mouthful of pool water.
You blow an actual tune when you come out of the water. It's like, neener, neener, or something like that. So it's a whole vibe. I really am interested in this. First of all, I would never, ever do it there because women who's always swam, I think it's like it's the smartest thing to get into as a kid, because then you just develop the best body like your muscles are the best, like Andy Wood style, where you're just like huge on top. I mean, right? Swimmers' bodies are ideal. So you don't want to really come in, you know, 20 years after the fact and be like, maybe I'll get into this. But if I already like, if I'd already done it or already had that kind of a lanky body, I would completely get into that because I love the idea of, I think swimming is the best exercise. It's so fun. And it really like, it's great exercise. It's like double normal cardio.
Yeah.
I'll say it's your whole body. There are a lot of people with a lot of different kinds of bodies in this club who are very fast, good swimmers. And I would say that I think it's because swimming is more about technique than it is about muscle. Like if you know how to like keep long in the water, you can swim really fast, even if you don't have, you know, a ton of upper arm strength or something. I'm not a super fast swimmer, so I'm a bad example, but I do in my swim team, a lot of the faster people don't have the like traditional sinewy body. There are some like, yeah, a lot of different kinds of physiques are good at swimming, I would say. So,
So
I think it's something people should try if they're curious.
Am I wrong to say, though, that some people just sink and other people don't sink and there's no rhyme or reason to it?
And the ones who do sink are witches?
I'm a witch.
Jordan,
exactly. Yeah,
Jordan, yes or no?
That's
a yes.
It is. Yeah, we do a lot of post-swim witch burnings. You see who sinks, you take them out to the pyre.
The pyre.
When you say stay long in the water, do you mean like stay, keep correct form up at the top, like as you're swimming?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of about being like being as straight a line as possible, you know, you know, which is, takes some like core strength or whatever. But it's mostly about like knowing to like keep straight and your head down and your.
When you said stay long in the water, I thought you meant. Try and make your pee pee cut nugget small when it's cold.
Yes, right. Yes, try.
See, I'm such a child. Keep, I can't
try
even
try
say
and keep semi hard while you're in the pool.
I knew that I was going to say pee pee, and I started giggling. I can't even deliver a joke anymore.
We've come through a lot.
Yeah,
Chris, Jordan. You know, you can stay long in the water, but it's also important to stay thick in the water.
Thank you, Jordan. I'm like a soda can.
Yeah.
Okay.
Guys, let's refocus.
Yes,
Jordan,
that's my
goggles,
fault.
No goggles.
Oh, you got to do gogs.
Yeah, yeah.
You got to gogs.
I never understood, like with skiing, too. Goggles are so important. Being able to see is the most important thing of just about any physical activity. And when I would see someone skiing with just a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah.
With tears streaming down their face from wind and ice pieces hitting their corneas. It made me sick. It still makes me sick.
It's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, it's horrifying. Gotta have goggles.
All my interest is because last summer I really started swimming a ton of laps.
Yeah, Karen has a pool, a little pool.
And I love it so. And it was this, I could immediately tell, I could immediately see muscles come out on my legs and stuff. It was this thing where I was like, wow, this is pretty intense. So I watched some YouTube video series and then I downloaded an app that was like basically swimming training and immediately had no idea what was going on. Like, I don't know. I watched the videos. I thought I got it, but it's all about the amount of laps you do and. There's a whole fucking system that's very intricate that I just didn't understand when I was downloading that app.
There's an oppressive lingo. There's like an oppressive, like hard to parse lingo, you know, like, you know, do 200s on the 50 DPS. And it's like, it's like a sunburned guy is just yelling that at you. And you're like, wait, what's, you know,
wait.
Do you know
the lingo now?
You translated it? I still am. I've been doing it for a while and I will encounter our sunburned coach will sometimes yell at us a thing. I'm like, yep, I still don't know what that means. I still don't.
Yeah. Same with golf and stuff like it. You had a nice draw on that. I'm like, thank you. I do not know what a draw is. Like, yeah.
I also do art as well.
Yeah. That's what you meant, right? Drawing. Yeah, it's okay to just play it dumb, I think.
Or just not know and not care because that's not. I love the idea that in both of these things you guys are talking about, it's kind of like the idea isn't people going there to be like, and now I win the swim club or, you know what I mean? It's like everyone's just trying to do stuff. I think it's like getting back to that a little bit of like doing things for the enjoyment and for the whatever you want to do. But it's not about, you know, no one's going to the Olympics. And or maybe they are.
Yeah, it's never too late to go to the... Yes, it is. It is always too late.
There's a very definitive cutoff date. Yeah, that's true.
Make me want to not wear it because I wear a little swim cap. But looking at your hair with the highlights that are because of chlorine, you make me want to... Because we have similar hair.
Yeah, we have similar hair. And I for some reason, can never find a swim cap that fits. It always just kind of pops off my head in the middle of the pool. I can be applying it wrong. I don't know if it's head size or what. But yeah, I swim without a cap. And as a result, my normally chestnut hair is now a Mark McGrath blonde on the tips. I'm McGrathing over here.
Oh, I'll never forget the time I sat next to Mark McGrath at the Crab Cooker. Jordan, you're from Orange County. You might remember the Crab Cooker. And someone asked him, I was sitting near him with just an earshot, and someone said, what's your favorite band of all time? And he said, Green Day. it was a surprise to me that he didn't say, Led Zeppelin or something, but boy, McGrath, you got the tips, Jordan.
That's the kind of authenticity that you kind of have to respect, you know? Yeah. He's like, music for me started in 1992.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of recognize myself in it. It's my favorite.
Right.
But I'm not going to pick my own. That would be an asshole move.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I'll do one over. Although, I think that's also kind of a good pick, though. I would think Mark McGrath would say something super fucking irritating, like Rush or something.
Right. Yeah.
It's very judgmental.
There is a kind of like non-pretentiousness to it. And I think that like who among us doesn't have a couple of fucking Green Day songs that we love every time they come on?
They made hits.
They did. Yeah.
They made hits. It's what they did.
They're a little embarrassing now, but
yes.
Who isn't?
Thank you.
God, we all sucked in the 90s and 2000s. We did.
I belong to like a punk subreddit. There's this punk subreddit that I like to read, and somebody posted a video of like Green Day playing in their like high school quad, and they're all like fucking 15 and like the sound is there. Like, it's awesome.
Really?
They rock.
Oh, wow.
No one's paying attention to them. Everybody's just eating lunch and like unlocking their bikes.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of awesome. If you can, if you can YouTube up the like Green Day plays their high school video, it's like, wow, they were just fucking great. You know, they were just savants, I think.
Yeah, I think because those first albums, Kerplunk and those albums that came out initially, the Slopped Out Sloppy Hours or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
They were kids, and I just heard them in the background. It was easy to pay for music to put in a skate video. So I remember Green Day before that Dookie album, and I totally loved it. And I do love. You're right, Mark McGrath.
Holy shit! Yeah, are we with McGrath on this one? Is Green
I'm
Day
a
our
1,000%
favorite band?
With McGrath on this one, as per usual.
I kind of like Sugar Ray's first album, actually, the one that's hard before they went beach melodic.
All right, now you've gone too far. Now you're going to use a towel beating.
No, sing one fucking early Sugar Ray song.
Don't you dare mess with my Green Machine. It's about the three wheeler, the Green Machine three wheeler.
No.
Yeah, and I always wanted a Green Machine.
Can you sing fake Sugar Ray songs like Karen can make up fake golf names?
It's a sit and spin. It's a sit and spin. They're just all about dumb toys from the 80s.
Yeah, all of Sugar Ray's first album was 70s televised commercials for toys and their jingles set to hardcore.
The good shit.
Pick up sticks.
Yeah.
Lincoln Log. It's a Lincoln Log. Jordan, I always see you when we work together at Fuel TV. You always seem really sensible. I would want your advice often, but you have done. I wouldn't call you a thrill seeker, but I have seen you get punched while interviewing someone. Lunatic motorcycle guy just punched Jordan in the face. Jordan let a snake bite him on the knowingly. Were you choosing between a spider and a snake? There's some Australian animal wrangler Jordan let a snake bite his arm. That
Jesus.
I would never do that. I can't believe Jordan
for
is.
Or a job that didn't give us health insurance, by
the way. Yeah, I can't believe you did that. There was the times you and I, we both got interviewed jackass guys while we got de-pantsed and wore Speedos, but that's just humiliation. We knew what we were getting into. But wait. I've seen you be hurt so many times.
I need to hear the snake story from Jordan's side.
Unless
that's all there is.
You know, when Chris and I worked together at Fuel TV, the late lamented Action Sports Network.
Yes.
Very lamented.
I was in the Fuel TV family, I like to think.
It was still like the heyday of Jackass. Like Jackass was still kind of like for that like sector of entertainment, like the number one thing was still Jackass.
Yeah.
So like that was kind of like the standard. Like if you know, that's kind of the stuff people wanted. So I think at our, you know, job, we were like encouraged to do a lot of like that sort of thing. And
because it's a funny visual and these are short segments. So
yeah,
something
and mostly
visually stimulating, like
right. And mostly people, the show is on in a bar with no sound. So like,
yeah.
One time, John Cusack hit you in the face with a full water bottle, and I think it's because you asked him to.
Yeah. So I think we were, like, encouraged to do, like, real stunty stuff like that. And, there was an episode where, God, there was, like, a cool punk animal wrangler who came on. Like, it was a cool, like Jack Hanna, who doesn't give a fuck. Like,
finally, an animal handler for me.
Yeah. Rockstar Energy presents Jack Hanna.
But he brought in a bunch
this
of
ain't
like
your daddy's animal wrangler. And he brought stuff. And part of the thing was like, okay, we should have the snake bite someone on camera.
I swear, Jordan, it was your idea and you were the victim of your own idea. Because no one would say, Jordan, let that tarantula, or wasn't it a spider and a snake? You had a choice to get bit?
Yeah.
It horrifies me to even think about it now, but yeah.
You know, and I think when we worked for that network, there was always a sense that, like, this thing is about to be shut down. Like, this network is about to be shut down. No one watches this. Like, this is, it's barely hanging on. And, you know, I think there was just a little sense of, like, we got to do our part to keep this on the air.
Yeah.
We got to keep our $700 a week and no health insurance.
Yeah.
Fucking throw your body down in front of...
I'm a team player. I will get bit by the snake if that means.
But like the action of a snake rearing to bite you, or that whole, it's just truly, I think it might be one of my biggest fears, or like the vibe of it is so horrible to, just to stand there and be like, fine, I'll do it.
It was a little snake, but I was sitting right next to you and you could see the teeth. The snake was slowly, it didn't happen quickly. He slowly went towards Jordan's arm and he just held it out. And we all watched the snake's teeth go into your arm.
I know. And then it was showed
sweat.
Over and over in slow motion.
This is from the snake cam. All to try and save a show. We all thought the Fox Sports execs would see our desperation and honor us another season.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen.
My favorite Fuel TV Jordan Morris memory is I was at a, it was a, like a Comic-Con, but for gay people, gay comic book writers, like that was kind of like thematically. And it was for some talk show. We were doing a segment for it. And so it was the main room. It was just like a smaller Comic-Con, basically, and with all the same kind of cosplay and everything. It was very similar. And then I went into this side room because we were just trying to get B-roll. And I went into this room. They were having like a costume contest, and it was just all, you know, it was Superman, but then sometimes there'd be like a ball gag in someone's mouth or whatever. It would be slightly the sexy version.
Yeah.
And I look over, I'm just standing there like a little bit going, what am I doing with my life? Like, why am I always, you know, those like field pieces where you're just like, now we're at the exercise expo or, you know, it's just, you're trying to make comedy out of kind of nothing. And then I look into the crowd and Jordan Morse is sitting alone in the crowd wearing a brown corduroy jacket and writing in a little notebook like he was from the fucking Wall Street Journal. And I almost had a nervous breakdown. I was laughing so hard and it was so delightful because it's like in Los Angeles, there's all these events and then they're just, I can't think of the phrase, but like all the people trying to make something for the, like making content, making, you know, clips for TV shows or whatever, just kind of descend on these events. Like, let me get my comedy out of it. And I thought I was the only one doing it. And then just to turn around and just like, there's Jordan trying to make some kind of a field piece.
In the brown, so I remember funny. That brown corduroy blazer too.
Yep.
That's so great.
I know. Yeah. And it's definitely like that kind of TV, you know, is so specific because you just get to know everybody else who does those. And right. And like when you show up at the like, all right, this is the furry community's go-kart day. And, you know, and then you kind of see the five or six other people who do like wacky field packages. And it's like those old Warner Brothers cartoons where the coyote and the dog punch in.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It's almost like for me, it makes me think of I've just stood for a very large chunk of my life. I've stood behind like a camera on a tripod wearing a laminate and just hoping someone comes to ask me if they can be on TV because I don't want to go like
those
producers that are so good at like, this is what a great personality and you're going to be such a good person to talk on TV. I was always like the stomach ache version of that of like, I don't want to get involved in anything.
You don't want it. That's such a tough thing too. Cause I was also never good at that. Like cause you don't want someone who doesn't want to be on TV, but you also don't want someone who does want to be on TV. Both are very bad.
But the worst is the people who want to be because they fuck it up every time. Like you want someone's aunt who would be like, oh, honey, no, but then go into her aunt thing, right? That was what I was always aiming for. But it's Los Angeles. It's filled with people who want to be on TV.
Right.
So you can't get a clean, fresh aunt like to save your life in any of those kinds.
That's why we would purposefully go to like Westwood or Venice or someplace where it's less likely you'll run into someone that wants to make it in showbiz. It's like, where's the most normal neighborhoody? Glendale it is. Let's go.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You can really get some good man on the street stuff done in Glendale.
Yeah.
And that's why those like the outer cities have banned any kind of like shooting on the street or shooting without every single person giving you a, what do you call it? Disclaimer? Release?
A release.
We
never
even had, not only did we not have releases, we rarely had a permit. We just would show up to these events. Do you ever miss it, Jordan, though? Remember we used to go to like Las Vegas and stuff, a place that I normally don't enjoy?
Yeah. And I mean, there's something really fun about like travel for work. Like we, you know, Fuel TV, you could probably kind of imagine what the budgets were on this thing. So, you know, we never like went first class or anything, but just like when your work buys you a plane ticket, you feel like you fucking gamed the system. You're like, I didn't buy this plane. I'm about to get on a plane. And, you know, even if you're going somewhere like, you know, shitty, even if you're going to Phoenix to cover an ATV convention or something like that, you're like, I'm getting on a plane for free. Free. I don't know. So I definitely like miss that kind of like, you know, weird travel and staying at the you know, Phoenix Marriott and
that's all
drinking at the Phoenix Marriott bar and stuff.
Yes. The big like party after when you actually get the job done, but you're still like you're being paid or you're on the clock, but the job is done. Yeah. That's the sweet spot.
That's one of those moments you're like, oh, if the 15-year-old version of me could see successful grown-up me now.
Guys, G4 is coming back. Let's all get a job at G4.
I will submit.
Time to dust off that reel. Yeah, the time we got to go to Vancouver and we were paid to go. And it was just a day of me talking to some video game designers. And then we didn't we just ride bikes in Vancouver for the rest of the time?
I consider that among the three most fun weekends of my life.
Yeah, me too. Me too. That's why I bring it up. Yeah, we had such a good time. Vancouver is so beautiful.
It is.
There's just an island. There's just a mountain with pine trees and buildings coming out of it. It's like where it seemed like another planet. It was
Karen,
amazing.
Do you remember a best and worst field package that you had to preside over?
Yes, I can fucking walk you through almost every single one we did. Because I had, we did field pieces. I had two jobs before I worked on the Ellen's talk show. When we did field pieces on Zach Galifianakis' talk show, it was, as you would imagine, just mayhem. He'd be like, I'm going to put on this beehive wig and walk across the street to the Chinese food restaurant and see what happens.
Yeah.
And he truly was just trying to see what was going to happen in public with him being weird. And he kind of was open to whatever and was kind of game. But when we started doing field pieces on Ellen, it was like we had to use a very specific amount of allotted time in a space to its maximum capacity. So because she would often be doing those shoots like on the Friday where we weren't shooting. So she wasn't getting a day off. She would have to go and do this field shoot. So the more work she had to do on the other side, like with everything else, those field shoots would get more and more. Like she would show up and she would want to walk in and it started, which makes perfect sense to me. It was a really good lesson in fine tuning producing for the talent, because you're so uncomfortable in those situations. So there was one where, like, the first one I think of was she was literally going from this field shoot to like an awards. She was hosting the Emmys or the Grammys or something like that. So she literally had 2.5 hours or something and didn't want to use all the time. And the bit was she was going to get her bartending license at that bartending school on Ventura.
Yeah.
This was a long time ago.
Sure.
I wonder if you still worked there when we did this field piece.
I think I went to exactly one field segment and it was at Universal Studios and I was the guy who had to get the releases. So I had to find the people who, and I think they were like getting people and pulling them into a building and giving them TiVos. Does that sound right? I don't know what the joke was.
Yes. It was the joke of you get something for free.
Sure. Yeah.
You freak out.
You didn't expect to get a TiVo and now you have one and now you're at Universal Studios and have to protect it on water rides.
Yeah, exactly. Can you rent a locker big enough for this TiVo?
Yeah.
Or who's going to walk back to the car?
I don't think
I was on that one.
Yeah, I was a PA on Ellen for a season. And yeah, I had to get the release assigned for that. And I don't think I went on any other field shoots.
Yeah, it was this one in this bartending school. It was the kind of thing where she just kept looking over at me like, what are we doing? And my answer was just like, it's bartending school. But it was just like there was a bunch of like kind of one off jokes and things. But for the most part, it was just like it's a one room place. You know what I mean? This school, they taught you how to bartend. And then all the other students sat as the customers.
Yeah.
And it was playing bar, but then people teaching you how to like make drinks, but she wasn't really going to get a real lesson. It was just this kind of thing where it was like, where are the bits that we're actually going to use that are going to make this thing worth our time?
Right.
And it was really stressful. And when you're looking at things like that, for me, immediately, I'm like, no, nothing. None of this is worth it. I get so negative and so like, then forget it. We shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, especially in a situation like that where there isn't a hallway or somewhere where you can go. You're just in a room.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere. It was always important to me to have somewhere to hide. Just for a minute, I would get so stressed out to the point that my body became arthritic. I think that working on that show was really stressful for me. Now that I don't worry about much now. It's just doing stand-up. It's like, I got to book a flight or there's things I don't look forward to, but I don't break out in a sweat and start breathing heavily because of anything anymore.
That's good.
Stressful business.
With those types of things, there's always just the possibility that wherever you are, people will hate that you're there.
Yep.
You know, like, yep. Sometimes it's fun for everybody. Like,
especially
sometimes,
if you have a wig, or like the time we were redneck yodelers and at some music festival and everyone hated us. I just remember being like, well, they're all going to hate us.
Yeah.
Let's get some content.
Definitely the music festivals were tough because, like, yeah, like musician, like obviously there's fun musicians like Mark McGrath.
Sure.
For example.
Sure. It's so fun.
But yeah, sometimes you're just trying to like wring something, you know, out of Vampire Weekend, who are just like, you know, stone-faced music theorists who don't want to say anything funny. And like,
yeah, yeah.
I also think there's that pressure too. I had these a couple times in when I was doing more performing, where I'd kind of be standing there and that feeling of pressure of like, you now have to make this something, and you know, there are people, your peers, and you've seen people do it and they do it really well. So now it's your chance.
Yeah.
Except for, that's not actually what it's not like, oh, all of a sudden it all goes great or whatever. It's like, it's usually a ton of planning, some memorization, or at least like, oh, if we do this, we could do this. There's like a lot of fucking work that goes into it on top of being open to being kind of like an improvisational mind. And it took me as a stand-up comic forever to be like, oh no, you yes and it. You're not here to like win and shit on people. You're here to like, you know, make it a big fun thing for everybody. It's, you know, learning those lessons, like while you're standing there, are definitely some of my least favorite memories of stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the one thing when I had to go to talk to someone before you would interview them or whatever, producing in any way. That was always what I'd tell them, like, I'm going to look stupid and you're going to look, I'm here to make myself look dumb. And you just get your information across and I'll be the butt of the joke, even if that's not what happened. But that's always, just put them at ease in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't miss it. But I miss seeing you on, I always thought you were, the whole reason I brought it up is you were always so good on camera. And when you started like writing and creating these things where you're not on camera, I was like, oh, that's not, Jordan wasn't into it as much as I was, like the actual being on camera part. That's what I wanted out of Fuel for some reason. It's like, wanted that experience, but
yeah, I had so much fun with that stuff that we did, you know, snake bites aside and you know, bad hotel rooms and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I just never felt like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like when I write something, I feel good and satiated in a way that I never did being on camera. And I know that like, yeah, I kind of felt like the on camera stuff was like a snack I was eating or a bag of chips. And then the writing felt a little more like a meal. Sure, I know it's the opposite to some people. I know that like, yeah, that like great performance makes you feel like you're, you know, creatively satiated. But
stand up does that for me. Yeah. That's my thing that I.
But like when you were just talking about the whole that it was the Jackass era. Therefore, these like the orders that came down was you guys had to be Jackass too. Like when you're under those directives that are so almost anti-creative, because it's like no one's going to do what fucking Johnny Knoxville is doing.
Yeah,
it's only going to feel like a ripoff, and you guys are the ones that have to be the like have to float that bad idea. I think performing for me really started to lose all of its fun, or at least especially on camera, because I knew that a lot of it was coming from people who didn't understand what was funny or why things were good. It was just like, do the thing they're doing. Give us that thing. You know, you got a lot of that thing. And that's like, oh, I can't do that for you. It's like make a viral video type of directives where you're just like, it doesn't work that way.
Sure. I have to be making a news story about stomping on grapes and then I have to accidentally fall down. You can't.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I'm sure we're all like still seething about the times in our careers where someone has told us to make a viral video.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think we can still be upset that we were just made to go to the Jackass thing and get naked in front of them. Like, hey, we're doing what you do.
I know.
Pull my pants down.
I remember
buying the Speedos and everything. Like,
yeah, we went to like deep West Hollywood to like the West Hollywood Club Zone and like bought,
nice.
You know, and bought
international mail.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh God.
And yeah, that was a thing too, of just like, and I think in our experience, I always found the Jackass guys to be very nice. I think they're nice appreciative of the fact that they've gotten famous from, you know, being shot out of a porta potty.
Yeah.
I think that was as like creative as our network got, was just like, do a Jackass, go talk to the Jackasses, and you do a Jackass too, okay?
Yeah. Do a Jackass.
But I do think it's a good place to, I think those jobs and those scenarios are the thing that, like, it teaches you almost like permanent lessons. Right. Like, once you get through one of the furry go-kart days, then the next one you go to, you're just like, oh wait, no, A, B, C, D, we know how to do this, because
let's shoot the ins and the outs here, we'll get this guy to say something, we'll do two of these and then we're out.
Your lessons become it's like for your own preservation, but then it's like, I think that's, it's like, it was a weird thing to me and a sad thing to me to be like, oh, I actually do not aspire to be on camera anymore,
right?
Yeah,
because it really isn't the thing I made up when I was 9 and thought that's what I wanted for the rest of my life. It's this whole other thing, which is be Jackass, give us Jackass results however you can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That whole idea where it's just like, yeah, I don't, I'm not, this is for someone else.
Yeah.
I'm like too much of a, I don't know. I think it's a very specific and very important ability.
Yeah, I'm too sensitive about, like, I care too much about what other people think that I can't just be thrown in those situations. It's bad for my health.
Yeah.
So you're,
did you guys have to do red carpet, like, movie red carpet where you were jostling against other reporters type of stuff?
Cool. Yeah, totally.
Jordan once said, some guy said something to Jordan and he goes, ooh, Hollywood big shot making some threats. And the guy, it was like a Brian Grazer, I don't know who it was, like a Michael Bay type. Do you remember saying that?
I don't Hollywood remember big saying shot that. It sounds funny.
It was really funny. And he looked at you and he's like, oh, this guy saw through me and he's right. And he just kind of smiled in admiration and then walked away. It was pretty great. Yeah.
What was he threatening?
I have all of Jordan's. I can't remember what. He did say in a jokey way, like, I will have you killed because I'm a big movie guy. That was his joke. And Jordan's like, ooh, Hollywood big shot making some threats. Jordan just thought it was a good out for that. And this guy was like,
we were doing this right, you know, right on the cusp of when one could be canceled.
Yeah.
I think people were like really fine just being dicks to us because, you know, there was no. Yeah, the threat of like what a dick you are leaking wasn't there. I think we experienced like, you know, a kind of pre social media level of dickishness that maybe hopefully people don't have anymore. But, you know, I'm sure they do in secret. But yeah,
that just reminds me, if I may share, did remember on the positive side, please my share. The one that I did love was on Zach Galifianakis' talk show. I believe it's called Late World with Zach. We did a thing where we sent like a PA or a field AP to the red carpet, to real red carpets. And he asked people questions that were all just on a list we gave him. So he wasn't trying to be funny. He was just reading shit, but they were all kind of assy questions. And we would do it to get like people going like, what did you just say? And then we would intercut it with Zach standing next to the dumpster. And so it'd be like, it's another red carpet, whatever. And it was this stupid thing where clearly the two people were not actually talking to each other.
Right.
And it was all just setups, but we were basically just intentionally fucking with mid-level celebrities so we could get their negative reactions. I can't explain it, but there was one where Ben Affleck literally was threatening to like beat the shit out of this AP. He's like, you think you're fucking funny? You think you're funny guy?
Whoa.
And like this whole thing where we're like, oh my God, this is perfect. And it was so shitty. It was so shitty of us as a comedy show to just be like, here's the comedy, you're pissed.
Yeah,
like that's so cheap. But I loved it so much because you're right. That was this era where on those red carpets, it's like, how dare you speak to me? It is me, the star or whatever, which I feel like no one would have the guts to do anymore unless they were like literally still Ben Affleck, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they think it'll go viral. Yeah.
And you're right. I think when you would, you know, when we did enough of those, there were just a like, there was just a little swath of, yeah, like B-list people that just turn, you know, whether they were in the movie or not, like Jeremy Piven's assistant from Entourage just was at everything, whether he was in it or not. And yeah, you could always kind of like rely on him for like a soundbite. He kind of like, he's like, this is my thing. I'm going to go to these and I'm going to like be like a little funnier than everybody else here.
Alec Mappa, right?
Oh gosh, I forget his name. Yeah, but
I think that I didn't watch Entourage, but if it is who I'm thinking of,
I would if, Karen, you didn't watch Entourage. I'm
don't
shocked.
Don't be mad. Don't be mad. I just the first time I watched on any of Entourage was when Gil Oseri did the Entourage-a-thon.
Oh,
which
right.
was him. It was one of the first streaming things I ever watched. And it was him watching every season of Entourage in a row without going to sleep for as long as it took. And then it led up to him getting in a limo and going to the premiere of the Entourage movie. And it was so fucking funny because it was him. It was Adam Pally. It was, they had like an improv or a, like a sketch group together or whatever. So they had all these funny people that were from their, you know, group or whatever. Some of the funniest people. And they just sat there watching Entourage and riffing. And it was fucking the best. And it made me, because I was basically watching it with them. I turned it on and then like was watching the same episode so that their riffing made sense to me. So I could see the whole thing. It was delightful. It was so funny. So then I kind of weirdly very much got to know the Entourage universe. Embarrassingly so but funny. It was really good.
I wouldn't watch it out of spite because I had a callback for Turtle and I didn't get it.
Oh,
yeah, I was very upset. Thank God I didn't.
There's an alternate universe where Chris Fairbanks was Turtle.
Yeah, wearing a backwards Kangol hat. Yeah, that could have been me.
Nah. Could have been.
Part owner of Fat Souls or whatever.
I love that idea that if you got the part, you'd just get everything.
All I want to do,
come up with a sandwich store that puts chicken fingers in the sandwich.
I just
want to
be a sandwich tycoon. That's the only reason I moved to Los Angeles. talk about Bubble the Book. This is still a graphic novel, right? This is going to have comic book illustrations?
Yeah. I know I spent a portion of this show dicking on people who work in comic book stores.
I know. I almost brought it up then. Yeah.
I am coming on, I mean, to see my good friends, of course, but also to promote a comic book / graphic novel. So maybe I had made I made a mistake earlier in the show. I don't know,
we'll bleep it all section.
I should say there are a lot of lovely comic book stores and comic book store employees. If you're in the LA area, secret headquarters, talk to Julie. She gives great recommendations. Some of the books that I still read today, I got from the first time I went there. So there are a lot of lovely comic book people amongst the chunky jewelry.
1,000%. I feel like when you're good, you're great at a comic book store because you are, if you're the person that's helping the newbie weirdo weekender and you're actually doing it, you're like, love can build a bridge.
Absolutely.
Yep,
absolutely.
You're really doing some work.
That can be a very influential person. Comic books are lovely. I have read them my whole life. I am glad that I have them in my life and I am glad I got to make one. So Bubble, the podcast Chris mentioned earlier in the show, it is a sci-fi comedy. It's kind of like the elevator pitch would be Search Party meets Guardians of the Galaxy. It's these kind of like, down and out hipsters in this bubble city, and they have to like participate in this kind of Hunger Games life and death gig economy to survive. Yeah, we did it as a podcast, and now the graphic novel is coming out. So I wrote the script with a great comedy writer named Sarah Morgan. The art is done by Tony Cliff, who is a great comic book artist who is known for the Delilah Dirk series, if anybody reads those. Our colors are done by Natalie Reese, who does the Dungeon Critters series. And yeah, it was like an awesome team. I've always like wanted to try to make a comic book, and this was just so much fun. Like, you know, if you know Tony's work, his like characters are so expressive and beautiful, but also his like fighting is great. And like Natalie chose this like psychedelic color pattern for it. So a lot of it's like on these alien planets, and she chose these like bright Jack Kirby colors, and everything looks really trippy and cool. And yeah, and my writing partner, Sarah, is just so funny. And yeah, so we got to just kind of like fill the thing with jokes. It's for grownups. There's a lot of sex jokes and
there's
gore,
lots of jokes
and robots and monsters and aliens and all that good stuff.
Is it totally new material from the podcast, or is it based? It's based.
Yeah, it is kind of like it is kind of a lot of the stuff from the podcast, but some new stuff, a different ending. Yeah, I think we kind of wanted it to be something that like podcast fans could get and feel like they were getting some new material, but also see some of the stuff they loved from the podcast. And yeah, and we definitely want to make it like new reader friendly. So like, if you haven't heard of the podcast, if you don't read comics, there's like no barrier to entry. You can just pick it up. It's a complete story. So yeah, we kind of like wanted to make it with like all those different, you know, groups of people in mind.
Yeah, I'm excited.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
That's very exciting.
I just loved the podcast, just the way it matter-of-factly described these action scenes. And now that you get to actually look at a really cool drawing of them, that to me is exciting. It would just be a totally different, cool way to experience it. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it is. It comes out on July 13th. But if you're listening to this before July 13th, you can pre-order it. Pre-orders are really like helpful for books. So if this sounds like
cool. That's how you get that. Is it street cred? No,
I think that's how you get a sequel from your publisher.
Sequel.
Publisher cred.
Yeah. But publisher on the streets.
Yes. And cred in the sheets.
Do you think if they want to pre-order the graphic novel is called Bubble as well?
It is. Yes. Yeah. I think if you call your local like indie bookstore or your local comic book store where a cool, nice person works. You just say Bubble, Jordan Morris, Sarah Morgan, Tony Cliff, one of those people. They'll pre-order it up for you and it'll be there on July 13th.
Yeah.
Nice. And a good way to support local indie comic book stores and independent bookstores.
Yeah, totally. Right. You can get it through all of your various online marketplaces. But definitely, you know, I know those indie bookstores and comic book stores kind of had a tough pandemic. I know a lot of that is one of the businesses that were inordinately fucked during all this. So yeah, if you can do a nice pre-order from them, they would really appreciate it. And
so they can
really
afford their chunky jewelry, right, guys?
Yeah.
We go right back to the
afford more ponytail wax.
Yeah, you with your
a stack of Bubble graphic novels wrapped in plastic sitting in the corner. No one will open them. No one will put them on the shelves.
No. He made fun of our jewelry.
My necklace. My mom bought this for me.
She bought me this medallion skull. Well, I'm very excited for you, Jordan. That's great. I can't wait to read it myself.
Yeah, thanks, man.
It's such a cool. Do you think you'd do more in the graphic or in the comic book vein? More work? More projects?
Yeah. Yes. I would like to and hope to, and maybe I am, but can't say it.
Yeah, that's that street cred I was talking about.
who knows
as well as in the
show,
what NDAs people have signed. But yes,
working
in comics is very very fun. I really love it. Like, comics people are very nice people and they're sweet nerds and everybody does it for the love. Like there's
awesome.
Not a ton of money in it. So people are just doing it because they love it. And it really shows. It is so fucking fun, especially if you like have a pro kind of holding your hand, which I did. I had a lot of great pros holding my hand while I tried it. So it was really, really nice. So
that's awesome. Very cool.
I'm so excited for your future life, Jordan Morris.
Yeah.
We believe in you. Hooray. And your swimming and your comics.
I've always believed in him.
Yes.
Thanks
all right,
for being
who believed
on,
in me first? Say when you yeah, believed in me and say who did it first.
Well, it really actually freaked me out earlier when Chris was saying you basically got him into podcasting because you, the word podcasting I'd never heard before. Yeah. And you invited me on Jordan Jesse Go. And it was like in this very odd time where I didn't know what I was doing or whatever. And it was truly just like, a what? Okay. Like, yeah. And my, of course, natural instinct would be like, no, thanks. I don't know what that is. And I'm not going to find out. So, and yeah. And instead you were highly recommended. And then, you know, and then it was like, oh, what a world.
Yeah.
To get introduced to.
Yeah. Thanks for changing our lives for the better, Jordan Morris.
Oh,
yeah,
happy
man.
Happy to help.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to help. You've been listening to Do You Need a Ride? DYNAR.
AR.
AR.
Are you leaving? Are you on your way back home? Either way, we want to be there. Doesn't matter how much baggage you claim, give us a time and date, terminal and gate. We want to send you off in style. We want to welcome you back home. Tell us all about it. Were you scared or was it fine?
Mouth horn.
With Karen and Chris.